This is Maria Buyukos.
And this is Zachary Richard Hill.
And you're listening to Creative Honey. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the Creative Honey podcast. Zach and Maria here.
Hi, everybody.
So I know that a lot of you guys out there have at some point in your creative careers felt like you were a total imposter.
We've danced around this subject in some other podcasts before, but I think we decided to, like, it's time. It's time to really tackle this head on. And I know a lot of other podcasts and articles and blogs have covered this. It's the imposter syndrome. And if we had, like, music like dun dun dun, like, we'd probably play it right now. And it's, you know, a really important topic, I think, because pretty much all of us are facing it at some point. And I think it's a good topic for today, just because I know something I struggle with, and I know Maria struggles with, but I've also kind of recently experienced it with some of my friends and colleagues. And I wanted to kind of, you know, dedicate this podcast to the people I've talked to that are kind of struggling with this, and let's see if we can find a way to tackle it a little bit, right?
Yes, definitely. It is. I mean, I'm glad that it's floating around as a topic, because I think a lot of creatives have just silently been suffering with it for a long time. So it's coming out to the light, and we just want to talk about, like, how common it really is and how it happens and all of that good stuff. So we're going to just get right into it after this little interlude.
Yeah, stay tuned. Okay, so beating imposter syndrome, that's what we're talking about today. You know, what is it? Why does it happen? How to beat it? And we just kind of laid out the kind of the outline for you, because I think the first thing or the first step in defeating a problem or solving a problem is to identify it, right? I mean, that's what we as designers are always looking to do. You know, as problem solvers, we got to first identify it. And so what is imposter syndrome, Maria?
Well, imposter syndrome is a culmination of a few different things. We think it comes from maybe like a fear of doing the work. Like, let's say in theory, you're confident about it. But when it's actually time to do the work, you get that sinking feeling.
That's a good point. And actually, it also could be when you're doing work for yourself, and I know I experience this a lot, you know, I have no problem doing that. When I'm, you know, making work for myself, for my brand, for all my social media, I enjoy doing that. I do it often, as some people that listen might know. But then when it's like, okay, do this for money and for someone else. Sometimes I'm okay, cool. And then sometimes I totally freak out. I'm like, oh my gosh, no, I can't do it. Like, it's cool when it's for me, but now you want me to do it for someone else. And that's kind of when that imposter syndrome rolls in.
Oh my gosh, I cannot agree with you more. I feel the exact same way. Like, when I'm doing it my way, my own thing, I feel pretty good about it. But if I'm like in a more structured environment, let's say like working for someone else and they want it done to their standards, I start to worry a little bit. If like, am I doing it right to their standards? Am I producing quality work that they want?
Right. You know?
Yeah, totally. I agree.
Yeah.
And I think like another thing that could characterize imposter syndrome is actually getting exposed as a fraud, like having that potential.
Well, that's kind of the definition of imposter syndrome, right? Is you're afraid of being exposed as an imposter, you know? So you maybe it's something, it kind of looks like this or feels like this, where you're walking and talking like you're a level 8 designer or level 8 artist, you know, but you deep down inside feel like you're level 2, you totally. Know, but you're that's what you really think. Or there's plenty of other examples. Maria, do you have anything to add? Like, or what's your metaphor? Yes, that was mine. You know, how do you kind of define being exposed as a fraud? What does that look like to you?
For me, it's a lot of it has to do with like, cause I've worked for myself for like forever. And, where my biggest fear, like imposter syndrome comes in is exactly what we were just talking about where, now I'm trying to do it to another standard and I'm unfamiliar with their standard. Like, let's say like when you first get you're first working at a new job or something, right? And like, you haven't quite learned their standards and completion yet. Like, you're still kind of getting the feel of it. And like, as you're learning it, like you're panicking about like, if you're going to get like fired or something, or like, you know, like those types of things, like, are they going to judge you? Or if you're working for a client, like, are they going to give you negative feedback? Are they going to give you bad reputation? Like that type of thing.
Well, yeah, no, that's a great thought. And that kind of leads us to our main next point, where I definitely feel that this is more of an American thing. And I'm not saying I'm an expert in international like creativity or design, but I just kind of feel in general America and or United States specifically, the carrot for Americans is being, you know, afraid of, it's fear. It's, I don't want to be fired. I don't want to fail. I don't want to be seen in a bad way. I don't want to be critiqued. So that's the carrot, you know, where the carrot should be, we'll get into this later, but the carrot should be just doing the best work you can do and just doing the best you can. And for so many of us, if we're really hustling, we're maximizing our time and doing the best work we can do, that should be the carrot, you know. And I'm still kind of in the middle of that, me personally. I don't know where you are at, Maria, but I think that would help for a lot of us. I know we haven't talked about solutions yet, but I think part of the problem is, you know, the fear in general of bad things happening.
Oh, I definitely still struggle with that. Like, I was literally just struggling with that like the other day, like to that thought. Even though, like, I knew the work was good, like, there was just this, it felt like all of a sudden I started thinking, like, of the worst-case scenarios, and that imposter syndrome totally crept up. But then, you suppress it, but it does show up. And I think Zach was just talking about how people don't want to, like, lose their job and all this other stuff, and how in America that pressure is so much different as opposed to, like, Europe, let's say. And I think also the other thing attached to that is that, like, there's so much accessibility to our reputation via social media and the internet. Like, someone can literally go and write a bad review, or like write it on your Facebook page and say you're terrible or give you a bad rating or whatever. So that, like, back then, if you did a bad job, like, only some few people would know about it, you know, and you can disguise it and carry on with your life.
Right, right. I mean, as if you've listened to us before, you know, at some point we'll get to social media. And we will again, but I know, I think that's a good point, is that we're afraid of being exposed, you know, now maybe more than ever because of social media, because we're, you know, most of us are putting on a front on social media. I know that I am a little bit, and maybe a lot of it, I don't know, but you know, that's definitely a factor to consider. And here's a crazy flip side, to kind of wrap up the problem, identifying the problem part of this podcast, which is sometimes failure is more comfortable than success. We don't, deep down, we actually don't fear it. We believe, we actually are comfortable with it. So on a surface level, oh, I don't want to fail. You know, I want a promotion. I'm not good enough. But we're familiar with that, you know, feeling, especially if you're an emerging, you know, creative, you just graduated or something like that, and like you're getting, you know, rejected by job offer, you know, your job applications aren't going through, whatever, and that gets familiar, so it gets comfortable. So maybe part of you starts freaking out and thinking you're a failure when one of your job applications goes through and now you have an interview, or you get your first freelance client, or you get that, you know, promotion to art director or senior designer that you wanted, but you never thought you were going to get, you know, because being where you are is always comfortable.
Yeah. And what really hit me was I was reading an article that Zach posted the other day, it was about Pentagram that someone had,
right.
And, one of the partners there, I was like so shocked to see this, but then it kind of made sense. One of the partners that were interviewing there said that he almost quit like multiple times as a partner because there were some days where he just felt like an imposter, like that he was like total crap and like didn't know what he was afraid people wouldn't think like know what he was doing or whatever, and he just started freaking out, and then he finally got over it, but it was like quite a while that he was feeling that way. And I was like, wait, a partner at Pentagram feels this way?
Well, I think, yeah, it's crazy, right? Like, I remember Debbie Millman, I think it was Debbie Millman, on another podcast, Obsessed with Design, a little shout out to another great podcast you should check out at some point. But she was talking about when she was interviewing a lot of great designers for her book, How to Think Like a Great Designer, almost all but like two of them had this problem, you know, of imposter syndrome. And the other two were like 80. You know, she made up that point. So it's like it took them like their whole lives to kind of get over the imposter syndrome, you know, which is like we'll talk about that later as a solution. But yeah, it's crazy how more, you know, anytime we get out of our, I know kind of stumbling over my words a little bit right now, but anytime we're getting out of our comfort zone, there's going to be more fear and more fear of failure. And it's almost like a kind of a crazy cycle. And I think the imposter syndrome has something to do with it in there.
Oh yeah, totally. And like what we were just talking about when he mentioned, you know, the thing about being 80 and like finally overcoming, you know, imposter syndrome and like the Pentagram guy, like, why do these like high level people feel that way? Like we look at them and think they're gods sometimes, you know, but really it makes sense because
They're just humans. At the end of the day, right?
And they're just people just like us. And no matter how high they go up, they're still human and still have their own issues and insecurities. But really, I think the common theme between like higher level people having imposter syndrome is the success causing pressure. Like, because the more successful you are, you're giving more responsibility. And now, like, all these people are looking to you for the answer. And it can cause like a little bit of a breakdown sometimes because it gets to you sometimes like, wow, if I say one wrong thing, like they're going to lose respect for me as a leader or whatever. So then they start to say, oh my gosh, maybe I'm an imposter. Maybe I'm not meant to be a leader. Maybe, you know, maybe they deserve someone better.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's, that's a really strong series of points there. And actually for me, it kind of leads into kind of our next point, which is we've identified the problem, but part of that identification now is why does it happen? We know what it is now. You know, if you're listening to us and you agree with what we say, we've identified what it is, but why does it happen? And I told you we were going to talk about social media, so here it is. I think one thing we forget as creatives, especially the creatives that are on Behance, Dribbble, VSCO, if you're a photographer, etc., is that we are seeing the best work out of people. You know, don't forget that. We are always trying to compare ourselves to not only the best designers out there, the people that are on Dribbble or working, not working, because those are invite only, you know, and Behance, you have to, you know, if you want to get the likes and the follows, you have to be good. But so you're, A, comparing yourself against the best designers or the best creatives, and B, you're now comparing yourselves against their best work. So it's like double the pressure to be great right off the bat, you know. So there's a lot of designers out there that, you know, not to be mean, but aren't, and I'm counting myself as one of them, that aren't as good as those greats, right? It's not, you know, it's okay. Like, we're only getting to see a handful of designers on some of these social media sites, and we're only seeing a handful of their work. We don't know how, you know, how much bad work they've had to make. That's why I respect the people on Dribbble that don't like, or Behance, or whatever, or Instagram, right? That, like, don't take down their bad work, you know, that they maybe were making a year or two ago or right when they graduated, because they're showing their process, or again, they're showing people, you know, they actually have gotten better and they weren't that good. Now, you know, I've done that. I definitely am a lot better than I was like a year ago, 2 years ago. And, you know, and definitely since the time I first joined Dribbble. And I like to be able to show, hey, I wasn't that good back then. I'm getting better, and I'm on my way. And it's a journey, and it's a process. And I really respect, I know I'm kind of going off a sidetrack, but I really respect designers and creatives that show their whole process and show their failures, you know, as a way of saying, like, it's okay. I feel like you look up to me and I feel like an imposter too.
Yeah, it's so weird, like, just thinking about, like, how most creatives will definitely, especially nowadays, experience that imposter syndrome. And it really just is in, like, all creative fields. And I believe that it's in probably most fields in general. But the reason why I think it's so prevalent in the creative field is because we're so visual and, like, you're not going to see someone's, like, accounting work, you know?
We're like, not, like, saying, oh, man, that's a killer stock portfolio or something like that. That looks great. I mean, yeah, we're looking maybe the results of things like that, but maybe not so much the process. And it's definitely not a visual.
Yeah.
Right.
And for us, like, our work is also our passion. Like, let's say you're at the office and, like, you're, like, a software engineer or something, and you're doing all that work that day, and only the people that are directly surrounding you are going to see that work. You're not going to go home on Instagram and, like, look at code on Instagram all day.
Probably not. No.
Like, you're just not.
And I respect what they do.
Absolutely.
They make what we do possible.
Absolutely.
But you're not but having not to compare visual, themselves to each other.
It's visual as a final result, but they don't post, like, the architecture of it, like, on Instagram. It's not a visual, like, directly, like, immediately visual field. Right. So and it's different.
And, like, this, well, and this happens in music too. It's not the limit to just visual work. I mean, think about it. Like, we all see the end result of Coldplay, but I don't know how many of you guys know they talked about how they played in front of, like, 8 people at crappy bars forever before they got noticed. I mean, I think we hear about those kind of, like, coming of age struggle, climb up the mountain stories in music a little bit more than we do in the visual arts. And I can't tell you why, but we just do. And I think it does go back to, we're always trying to show the best of ourselves when it comes to visual arts, where music, you know, I used to be a musician, you know, we're trying to get out there. So we're not afraid as much to, you know, go play bad shows and record music, you know, et cetera, you know, so we're willing to expose ourselves more. Again, I'm speculating. I don't know why. What do you think? I don't know why there's a difference between the kind of coming, the struggle to the mountain, top of the mountain story in music, why we see more of that, you know?
I actually think, I might know one of the reasons, because people there's some people who are, like, natural performers. Like, they like attention. They want that feeling.
Definitely.
There's a lot of times you'll see, like, people who are actors and musicians, like, they get energy from that. Like, it gives them energy. Whereas introverts, which are a lot of designers, and creatives in general, like, they get drained, being on display. Like, they don't like that at all. So
that's a good
point. And not all actors and musicians, like, there's plenty who, like, get stage fright and throw up before every show. Like, that's still there. But, like, the passion for that, like, overcomes that. But, like, as designers, like, we are trying to overcome that as well. Like, but since a lot of us are more introverted, like, and doing stuff from the comfort of our own little space, it is, like, a bigger leap.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point, actually. I definitely think that could be part of it. So, but the bottom line is, we don't know for sure why we only see the best on social media, but we do. And that's something to keep in mind. And it really goes back to that kind of common thing that you were taught when you were a kid, which is, don't compare yourself to others.
Yes.
You know, which is something we are pushed to do more and more, you know, on social media now more than ever. But we also talked about another cause a little earlier. Maybe we could dive in a little bit deeper to this, is, you know, fear as the carrot, fear as motivation, you know. So again, I really think this is more of an American problem than anything else. We're afraid to lose our job. We're afraid to lose our home. We're afraid of failure. We just are. And because of that, again, it goes back to being comfortable. Well, it's easier to, you know, not do anything and not fail than to get out there and maybe mess up and make a mistake. We're so comfortable with doing nothing, you know, so then when it comes time to doing something, then we feel that we can't do it, hence the imposter syndrome.
Yeah, and everyone's capable of doing whatever they put their mind to, really, in most cases. But yeah, it's like this major psychological block that all of a sudden makes you feel, like, totally inept. And fear, I've seen this happen a lot. Like, I've even seen, like, it in other psychological circumstances where, like, let's say someone is, like, has been depressed for so long, and then finally they have an opportunity to be happy, but like they choose to stay in their comfort zone because it's just easier. They know it better. It's the same with this.
Yes, exactly.
You know?
Yeah. So we'll talk about solutions later, but there's a little sneak preview. Just, you know, find a new motivational tool, you know, other than bad things will happen to me if I go out there and try, kind of thing. So, you know, this is, you know, try to find a new motivational tool. The last point, I guess, on why it happens, and there's probably dozens, right? Mm-hmm. But we talked about this a little bit. More success equals more responsibility and pressure. This goes back to just what we're talking about. We're afraid of being successful because there's more pressure, there's more responsibility. You know, I think imposter syndrome in general is rooted in safety almost. Like, we want to feel like we're, because if you think about it, the imposter syndrome is an excuse almost to do something. Well, I'm not good enough to do it, so I'm not going to do it. I really can't do it, so I'm just not even going to do it. You know, right?
Yeah, and I think when you're in a position that involves other people, like I was saying earlier, you become not only fearful for your livelihood, but theirs. Like, let's say you just started your own little studio and you have like a few people you're working under you. Like, now you're like, oh my God, just lay down and go to sleep at night. This might be running through your head. What happens if we don't get that big client that we were hoping for? How are they going to lose their homes and their families? How are they going to feed themselves?
Yeah, I respect the people who run shops of that have two or more people, and or even one or more, because, you know, including, you know, my colleague I work with, Damian, who we'll have on the show at some point. I mean, he has to worry about, you know, feeding two people, you know, like all the time, like. It's like, okay, I got three people, right? Multiple people, that's my point. You know, he's got jobs. He's got three people working for him that he's got to take care of. You know, that's a good point. And he's got a family to take care of. So the pressure is there, but I give him a lot of respect because he steps up to it all the time. And that's one thing I admire about him. He doesn't really kind of get afraid, which is great.
Yeah, and it's hard. And a lot of time, it takes, like, seasoning over time, you know, like, to get to
right,
that point.
Right, I agree.
I think, like, everyone, like, I've been through this on a minor scale. Like, when I was first out of college, I started my first little studio. I had that feeling at one point because I was going so quickly and things were happening so fast that, like, it was like you're climbing the ladder and you've just been climbing and you haven't been looking down at all. And then at one point you finally look back, you look down and you're like 1,000 feet in the air. And you're like, oh my God, like, what happens right. if I fall? Like, you weren't fearful climbing, but when you stopped for a moment to think and look back, look down, that's when the fear hits you. It's just like interesting, like, psychological thing. Like, and I've been through that a few times and I'm like, this is so weird. So I would tell myself, like, just don't look down, like just keep climbing. Cause if you stop to look down, then you do like weigh yourself down with the what ifs, you know?
I actually think that's a perfect segue into our first solutional point or solutions based point, which is, you know, master your craft or practice makes perfect. So when you're climbing up, like you're saying, you're never going to look down because you're not afraid of falling because you're an experienced rock climber,
yeah.
to stay with the metaphor, you know, so you're good when it's time to do it. So if you're practicing, you're getting more comfortable at what you're really passionate about, and you feel like you're good at it, then when it's time to actually do it for money or do it for a boss, and you could do it. Like, I think Andy Miller, who does it, I'm shouting out every two podcasts today now, not just our own. I'm bad at ripping our own podcast, but sharing someone else's. And I've mentioned Andy Miller's creative pep talk before, and I think he has a great metaphor. It's like you practice every day to get ready for the big game. If you're a sports star or an athlete or even a high school athlete, why not do the same as a creative person? And that's why I know Maria and I have always kind of debated about daily challenges, or, you know, if you don't do it for social media, I think that's okay too, but do something every day, you know, make something every day, you know, create something every day, you know, it doesn't have to be spectacular or Instagram or dribble worthy, who cares about that stuff, but you're practicing, you're getting ready, you know, like I want to get better at layout and composition and using shapes in my design work. So that's what I've been posting lately on social media. It's had mixed reviews, but I don't care. I'm getting better at what I really want to do.
You know, yeah, absolutely. it's interesting. Like, if any of you have ever done something scary, like, let's say, like, you did a cliff diving or bungee jumping, or, you know what I'm saying, you rode that big roller coaster for the first time, like, the first time, like, when you're about to get on the ride, like, you're terrified, right? Like, you're just totally scared and out of your mind, and then you do it, and then now you're addicted. Now you're like, I want to do it again. That was cool.
I think that's a great point. Make whatever you want to do less unknown.
Yes.
You know, you guys would like laugh at me when if you would have seen how I interacted with like the software for the first time, like the creative, like the Adobe Creative Suite, or, you know, screen printing. If my screen printing teacher is listening to this, she will know that because I was like terrified of it, because I was terrified of it, and I was. So, because it was unknown, and I'm doing so bad at some of this stuff just because I was scared of it. So now that I open up the software tools like every day, and I work with it every day, I'm not intimidated by it anymore. So now I'm a little more confident working in the software. Same thing with screen printing. You know, we just did some screen printing about a month ago, and, you know, I haven't done it in a year, but since I did it over and over again for a while, I just jumped in there and did it, and it wasn't perfect, but I just did it, you know? So it's just like, I think that's an amazing point. The more you do it, the less you're afraid of it.
Yeah, definitely. And it's, I mean, look at the people who are the most, like, the finest athletes in the world, or, you know, the finest creators in the world, or whatever, or finest scientists, engineers. That's their thing, man. Like, you know? They're confident, like, and they're gonna have moments like everybody where they doubt their abilities, they think they're total crap, but at the end of the day, like, if you're doing it so much, you're bound to become seasoned, you know. And it's interesting, like, I felt this myself, like, okay guys, I used to be like really bad at logos, like, I used to be totally terrified of that, creating something in that little of a space, like, it just freaked me out. I actually used to have trouble with space in general. I'm actually dyslexic, so it really was difficult for me going through like landscape architecture, making plans and drawing stuff backwards and reverse and mirrored and all that. And finally, like, I just kept getting opportunities to do logos, and I just kept doing it. And now I love logos. Like, I do logos for fun, and I feel confident when I'm doing logos. Like, I feel like, yeah, this is my jam. Like, this is my medium. And it's a totally different way of thinking. Like, I hardly ever have imposter syndrome when doing logos now. It's amazing going from where I was to now, just seeing that progression.
Right, right. Great point. So I guess one of the things, like, one of the takeaways from the show is, practice makes perfect, but practice also erases fear. So just think about that. I know it does for me, it does for Maria, and I think it's really a great solution for all of us. Next thing, this next point, Maria, is something you feel pretty strongly about, so I think maybe this is something you should lead off, which is, you know, accepting that many creatives feel like an imposter too. You kind of talked about it a little bit, but maybe you could kind of dive into it a little bit deeper.
Yes. The curated culture that has been cultivated in our modern society is a big issue, like we were talking about earlier with this. This I feel fuels a lot of this whole thing. There, I mean, I have been like flabbergasted almost a few times when I've met people in real life, like, and had been following them on social media, and I was like, what? Like the level of insecurity that I picked up and all this other stuff, like, you would never guess, like, looking at their work, it's so beautifully curated, like, you'd never guess they're struggling financially, or that they think that they're crap half the time, or anything. Like,
I think it's literally laughable when one or two of them say, oh man, you're more talented than me, and I'm like, are you what? Insane?
Because we look at them,
what,
like,
you do. Yeah. What do you, I mean, but that's a point. We're all feeling that everyone's better than us. It goes back to that, you know, right? I mean, yeah. That's kind of one of the core problems of the imposter syndrome, was that most artists, designers, photographers, musicians are always thinking that someone's better than us, partly because it's true. You know, I used to coach basketball way back in the day, which is not that long ago actually, but I used to tell my kids, just worry about being the best you could be, because there's a lot of teams better than us, and we're better than a lot of teams. So just do the best you can do every day and stop worrying about what everyone else is doing.
Just know that, like, this type of thinking is, like, kind of embedded in, like, humanity, you know? Like, I mean, you can go all the way back. Like, I took a Native American anthropology class in college, and I was like, I thought it was really funny how even like, you know, a few hundred years ago, certain Native American cultures like had who had the biggest obsidian knife, like, and it'd make you feel like inadequate if you didn't have this big giant honking like obsidian knife, like, or like who had the most beads around their neck. Like, people have always done this, like in the 50s,
right?
That's where like Keeping Up with the Joneses like, who has the greener lawn, the nicer car, the prettier wife. Like, we've found a way to do this to ourselves, but now with social media and being in the visual communication field, this is like, it feels like it's almost like 10 times more like concentrated. Just know, like, when you're putting yourself out there, or you're worrying about the job, or like if you're gonna get fired or whatever, the worst case rarely ever actually happens. And if it does happen, it's rarely as bad as you thought it would be.
Well, actually, it can happen, and it does, but the worst case scenario is usually not that bad.
Yeah, it's not as bad or detrimental as you thought it would be. In fact, you might actually learn a lot through it, and you might actually get way better.
Right. Well, it goes back to, once you experience something, you're probably gonna grow and learn from it and be less afraid of it.
Oh,
and be more confident and feel less like an imposter.
It's seriously like an inoculation. Like, I have failed quite a few times.
We all
Zach
have.
Always says, hey, you could always use some more failure, you know? And I'm like, really? But he's right.
Because, we don't fail enough in this society, especially American society.
Because failure, like the idea of being a failure is frowned upon. But then when you read the success stories, or you hear about the success stories, like, we love, you know, Gary Vaynerchuk, because he talks openly about how hard it was for him to get where he was, and the failure involved and all that. And it's like, when it's really, really good people talk about it. Like, it's good for everybody if you talk about your failure. Failure's great. I went to an alumni event at my college a few years ago, and this one guy did a whole we had alumni could do a presentation, you know, about like what they're up to and stuff. I swear to you, his entire presentation was about how much he failed. Like, that's the whole thing. He's like, so I failed at this, and then I failed at that, and I failed. It was hilarious and refreshing, because this guy was like, and it's great. Like, and I learned a lot.
Well, think about it. It's starting at a youth level now. It's starting like with, it starts with parenting now these days, which is scary. You know, going back to my time as a coach, and I love all your parents out there that are listening. I'm still friends with you. I'm sorry. But let's say, like, you guys are over scheduling your kids to, and I know one reason why, it might not be the only reason, but you don't want your kids to fail. Mm-hmm. You're afraid of them failing, and I get that, but let them go ride their bikes and fall off them. Let them get their knees scraped. Let them get dirty. Let them make mistakes and learn from them. But all, I mean, this culture is so risk averse these days that we don't know how to handle it when risk does come our way, and we're so afraid of it. You know, so like, I'm afraid of making mistakes too. I don't want to be homeless. I don't want to burn my hand on the stove. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to make mistakes. But there needs to be a balance of being afraid of mistakes, being afraid of fire, being afraid of, you know, losing your job. That's okay, but it needs to be healthy. You know, let it be with you, but don't let it control you.
Definitely. And that was a really great set of points you had there, Zach. We just know that part of this has to do with your programming, especially in America. Like, we are programmed. We have a lot of, there's a lot of still poverty and stuff in America, but a lot of us have actually been over sheltered and have had privilege, and we're not used to, having like certain types of adversity. Like, you know, our adversity is like, oh, I didn't get an A today on my test, you know.
Right.
So just know that you do have to overcome programming. And it's not always easy to do that, because you're literally cultivated in that environment. But it's possible. And honestly, like, I recommend just taking on stuff you've never done before. And some of the most successful people in the world say, if it terrifies you, then you're doing the right thing.
Well, yeah, I think that leads into our last couple of points perfectly. You're like the segue master today.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, nice job. but the last couple of points is, one, prioritize your goals. You know, why are you doing the work that you're doing? We all, like, I'm one of those guys where I accept that we need to make money and we need to make a comfortable living for ourselves, but that's never been my North Star, as I like to call it. It's never been what motivates me, is to make the most money that I can make. You know, I want to be able to pay the bills and have a decent living. I definitely want to be that middle class guy, but I've never been like, oh, I want the biggest boat and the biggest car and the biggest house or whatever. I don't want the, I want nice things, but not the nicest. My point is that getting the most like tangible, intrinsic things is not my goal. My goal is to do the best work that I can do. I want to be better at what I do this week compared to that last week, this month compared to last month, this year compared to last year. Am I getting better at what I do because I love what I do? And so I'm trying to do everything I can. And ask Maria, she knows that a lot of what I do is geared towards making me better at what I do. Maria has been helping me juice more and get more exercise, go back to the gym, play basketball again. Yeah, it's really cool that it's going to make me look and feel better. But you know what I'm really excited about? It's going to make me think better and do better design work. That's my major motivating factor for me to get healthier. That could be overly obsessed, but my point is that my goal is to do the best work I can. And I think for me, that helps. So when I do feel like a failure or an imposter, I'm able to kind of push that away a little bit sometimes because I'm like, well, I really love doing this and I know I need to get better in this project and this exercise is going to make me better.
I really love everything you said about prioritizing goals. I definitely like what you said about, basically you're breaking these goals up into like very digestible goals, like things that they're simple. It's not crazy. It's not like, I want to get a Maserati next year. It's, I think, improving these basic kind of things, like, and breaking them into like daily or monthly, like, yes, I'm going to be better. I'm going to be better at, painting, like this particular thing next month than I was this month. Those things are going to lead to you getting more material items and things like that because you're improving yourself on a more deeper level.
Well, that makes me think of something else in the sense where, and if you're a designer or a strategist that deals with branding, you'll understand this. And this is a Simon Sinek thing, like know your why first. I use the North Star metaphor all the time. So what is your North Star? Why? What are you always pointing towards, right? And it's the same thing with Simon Sinek. What's your why? Start with why. Why are you doing what you're doing? Is it just money? It doesn't make you a bad person, but it might, in my opinion, increase your imposter syndrome or hide in your fear. Just find what it is. Do you love what you do? Is that your why? Is that your North Star? There's pros and cons of that too, obviously. But my point is that I've told a lot of people this, and Maria, one of them, is once you figure out your why, life actually gets a lot easier from my experience. I remember in my late 20s when I was really floundering and wondering what I was going to do with my life, is a big reason was because I didn't know why I was even living, to a certain extent. Why? Why am I waking up every day? What's making me excited to wake up, right? And when I found graphic design, when I found design and fell in love with it, life became simpler. I know why I'm waking up every morning, to be the best designer I could be. And so everything I do is geared towards that now. So everything from, and that floods into just day-to-day life. How can I be a better designer? And how does that affect where I live and what I buy and stuff like that?
Totally agree, guys. Finding meaning is the ambrosia of life. Everything becomes clearer. Your life becomes happier. Everything falls into place and you start to realize you can manifest your goals. All these dreams that you have start to actually happen much quicker because you're like aligning yourself with your truest purpose, I guess you could say. So definitely, Zach, I totally agree with that.
Well, yeah, no, thanks. I appreciate that. I think, this has been an easy topic to talk about for both of us because we're comfortable with it because we're both experienced in it. And I think that leads us perfectly to the last point, which is get outside your comfort zone. That's a great way to defeat imposter syndrome. We've said it so many times today that syndrome, feeling like an imposter, is rooted in fear, and fear is rooted in the unknown. So the more you get outside of your comfort zone, the more you can experience, the less fear you will feel and the less you'll feel like an imposter.
Absolutely. You know, that's why if you talk to people who've been through a lot, they tend to have, not all of them, but a lot of them tend to have less fear in general because they've already been through hell and back, right? Like, they've inoculated themselves against things in life so that, you know. And I think it also helps to think about, like, a time in your life that you got through that was really difficult and you got through it, because now you can say to yourself, well, I got through that. Well, why can't I just get through this? Like, you just have to put everything in perspective at the end of the day. And all of us have been through hardships that we got through that were really tough and we weren't sure we were going to make it through. So just remember those times. Think about all the good things that are happening and know that, like, no matter what, like, you know that you have it in you to get through those things. I know we've gotten, like, really philosophical here today because, honestly, this is a psychological issue. And it's even almost like, it feels just like almost on a spiritual level sometimes, like these types of issues.
I know. I think that's okay. And we could have done the cliche, just be more confident. Right?
Yeah.
Like,
easier said than done.
Exactly. Like, but how? How do you be more confident? And I think we're trying to list out some ways that we try to be more confident for ourselves, you know, Maria and I personally, you know. So, you know, these are just some things to just to think about, hopefully, for all of you guys as you, you know, head into whatever stage you're heading into with your creative career, you know. So, you know, Maria, are you ready for kind of a recap of everything we talked about today?
Let's do it.
Cool. So we first identified the problem, right? What is imposter syndrome? When we decided, you know, we're afraid of doing the work, especially for other people. We're afraid of getting exposed, hence, you know, the literal definition of imposter, right? And we're afraid of, you know, negative criticism and failure. You know, and that leads to sometimes, though, failure gets more comfortable than success. So we're even afraid of when good things happen to us.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And then we talked a bit about why it happens. And, you know, it's a social media, seeing only the best work out there, not seeing everyone's process and how they got there. Getting used to fear being a motivation, being in a constant state of fear, and not being able to kind of break outside of that habit. And then ultimately, like, becoming successful and then being fearful of all the responsibility and pressure that's now part of your life.
Right. So, yeah. So we identified the what it is, why, and how it happens. Now, how do we beat it? And we decided, you know, practice your craft, master your craft, 10,000 hours, daily challenges, do it every day, prepare for the big game, right? Except that many creatives, we all feel like this at some point in our lives, right? You know, either right now or in the past or in the future. I think the last two points are the big ones for me anyway. Prioritize your goals, find your why, let your why lead you, your North Star lead you. And finally, don't be afraid to get outside of your comfort zone. The more experience you get, the more unknowns you could turn into knowns. The more confident and the less like an imposter you feel. So yeah, there you have it. That was our overview of the imposter syndrome and how to tackle it. And we really hope you guys took something from it today. You know, I think we learned something just talking about it, right, Maria?
Definitely. I think it forced us to dig into our subconscious and analyze ourselves a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, thank you guys so much for listening. I know we had another little break and we probably had too many breaks. But unfortunately, we actually had some real reasons to take a break. I had some personal, you know, a personal tragedy I had to deal with. And Maria had a, you know, some personal things she had to kind of take care of the last few weeks. But we really appreciate you guys listening and supporting the podcast and the blog. So, you know, on that note, we want to tell you how you can find us individually as creatives and together, you know, with the podcast. So, Maria, where can we find you?
So you can find me personally. The easiest way to find me is on Instagram at, so I'm at Maria_Fofia. You can also find me on Twitter with my full name, Maria Bouyoukos, last name Bouyoukos. And Zach, where can we find you?
So I work for a studio, Active Color. So you can find us at activecolor.com. We are doing a lot of web digital work, UI, UX, and branding and identity. So if you need anything like that, you know, hit us up. We're here to help. And you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, usually Zachary R. Hill or ZR Hill, on any of those social medias out there in the interwebs. I'm on also on Dribbble. So check me out there if you want to see more of my work, Behance as well. And Maria, where can people find Creative Honey?
You can find Creative Honey on Instagram, just Creative Honey altogether. You can find us on Twitter. I believe it's Creative Honey _. And also follow us on Facebook. I think we're under Creative Honey Media on there. It's not always easy to get on Creative
and,
Honey.
And the great hub is our website, creativehoney.org, where we're posting articles, posting podcasts, and we're really trying to get that going again and build things up. So,
And also, don't forget that we're on Stitcher, iTunes, SoundCloud, and you can also listen to episodes on our blog as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Find us and follow us on iTunes. Thank you guys so much for the great reviews that you guys have put in so far. We really, really appreciate that. It really motivates us and lets us know that, you know, hopefully we're doing something that's helpful and it helps the podcast grow. So, yeah, we really appreciate it. And until next time, stay creative and enjoy what you do. That's it.
Talk to you next time, guys.
Bye.